Hey, Justin, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
What do you think about,
No, I saw it last week.
Oh, what about,
Not again.
Oh. How about this?
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So what did you think of Alien?
It was... I'm not going to lie, the last 20 minutes were a little hard to watch because of all the flashy lights.
Yeah.
But it was okay. It wasn't bad.
So, all right. For... You know what? First, I'm going to apologize. I know that that ending's coming. And anytime that I watch it when it's just me... I always open up the door and have like the kitchen light on. So, for those of you watching at home, not because it's particularly scary, but there is a set of scenes in the last 20 minutes where there is a very, very stark contrasting strobe light effects.
Yes.
And it's really unsettling. And it's the culmination of this tension that they've been trying to build. And it's like just as you're about to flip your crap, suddenly you've got flashing lights.
Mm-hmm.
And it discombobulates your whole thing. And it's done this to me. I've seen this movie probably 36 times. And it still does that. So for those of you who didn't read the title... and don't know what's going on, and you've just clicked on this because you're like, hey, here's a 16-minute podcast, and
welcome.
That's how long I've got in the car. Welcome. Glad you're here with us. The premise of our show is that Justin and I, over our lives, have watched lots and lots of movies, and it turns out not always the same ones.
Yes, I was going to say, a lot of them overlap. However...
And so... what we do is we challenge each other to just watch something that flew under their radar,
mm-hmm.
or that they've seen just enough of to know what it is, but not have actually sat down to experience. And today, we're talking about 1979 Alien.
Yep.
One Alien.
Singular.
Now.
Sensation.
Now, give me another like 6 months and I'm going to have them watch Aliens, plural. Which is a James Cameron film, but everything in its time.
Yeah.
Alien tells the story of a smart woman that no one listens to, and so eventually they all die, and she escapes with her cat.
That is, yes. Yes.
I suppose we probably ought to put more detail into that, shouldn't we?
Do we, though?
I don't know. I mean, that really covers so much. The movie Alien is, I'm going to say it's split into effectively three main parts.
Okay.
The first half hour, getting to know the crew,
mm-hmm.
which these are truckers in space.
All right? Yeah, yeah.
Every single one of them, absolutely human in terms of their mannerisms and their abilities and so forth. These are not... There's no superheroes in the mix.
No.
You know? And so, and they're commercial space flight. You know?
Said it was a towing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a commercial ship. And so they're towing a whole bunch of mining ore from wherever it was mined back to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very empty, quiet beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It is nearly 7 minutes before the first words are spoken.
Yeah.
And for anybody who got really, really impatient with the first like Star Trek, the motion picture, where there's like those really long silent tracking shots, this is going to drive you nuts.
Uh-huh.
Now it's there for a purpose, and the purpose is in every scene to build more tension.
Yeah.
There are a couple parts where it doesn't, where it like lets you loose, and it lets you loose for what, 12, 15, 20 seconds?
Maybe.
And then you're right back in.
Uh-huh.
But the first 30 minutes getting to know the crew, 7-person crew, science officer, engineer, captain, yada, 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 yada.
Yeah.
This, They're taken out of their cryo sleep because there's an SOS. They don't know it's that right away, but it's an SOS, and they go investigate, and one of the crew members is attacked by some kind of spidery-looking alien with a really long tail.
Yes.
That one's Hurt.
Yes, John Hurt.
John Hurt. Hello, War Doctor. So the second half hour, and it takes a half hour if you didn't notice, that they're dealing just with this guy who's comatose and wrapped up with a spider thing around his face.
Yes.
Also known as a face hugger is how it's known. So
less cute than it sounds.
So we're an hour into the movie, and the only aliens that we've seen so far is a dead fossilized skeleton of an alien in the big ship, and a little bitty face hugger, you know, spidery thing.
Yes.
So an hour in, chest burster scene. Or the ugliest penis ever.
Yes. I mean, I've seen Spaceballs many a times, and so the scene at the end in the diner, oh no, not again.
Yeah.
That's John Hurt. That's what happens, except more.
More so. Fun fact, when you watch this, did you notice that everyone got real quiet for about a second and didn't move and then went back into things?
Yeah.
Because Ridley Scott did not tell them that there would be blood involved. And so when the thing burst out of John Hurt's chest and the blood like coats Lambert's character and she like freaks out.
Yeah.
It's because she did not know she was about to be covered in blood.
Okay.
So all of the actors, this is a very small film. There are a grand total of 8 human beings.
Yes.
In this whole thing, and one of them is wearing an alien costume.
Yes.
And so that scene, that chest burster scene, everyone just kind of, it happens and blood goes everywhere, and everyone just stops and looks at where the wound was for like just this split second before then they start going back and doing what they were doing. It always felt really odd to me until I learned that little fact. It's just like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. You weren't expecting that.
I see what you did there.
But it's not that you weren't expecting that because an alien burst out of a chest. It's you weren't expecting that because you're actors in a movie and the director did not say, keep acting no matter what.
Yeah.
So we're an hour in.
Yes.
The last hour is trying to find that little ugly penis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, really, that's just the next 20 minutes.
Yes.
Then they find. Then we get our first victim of the now adolescent alien. Four aliens, you know, for something that's singular alien. There's four because there's the face hugger, there's the ugly penis, there's the adolescent, and then there's the full grown mature at the very end. And so they all have their plans and. You know, go and get, we're going to check out the, we're going to check out the air vents and we're going to close them down. Bye bye, Captain. We're going to try and smoke it out, you know, with flamethrowers and so forth. It doesn't work. It's around about this time that we learn that the science officer is not only, betraying them all. Because he's got secret orders from the company. Yep, back in 1979, corporations were evil then, too.
Who knew?
Weyland-Yutani. but he is also not human in that he is an android.
Yes.
And seems to be glitching out there at the end, which they don't give enough. And even in the alternate cut, there's not really any explanation for why he just kind of glitches out a little bit there. When he gets his head knocked off by the fire extinguisher, that makes sense.
Yes.
But before that, it doesn't.
No.
So, best I can come up with, and this is me just speaking into the ether, is he's the science officer, the medical officer, and he is specifically acting to try to kill somebody. And that's against you know, that's against the Asimov rules, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, even if you take that out, it's against his primary programming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, I've got this secret thing I have to accomplish, but it's in conflict with this other thing, so...
Maybe.
Maybe.
So, they stop him. They find out the company has effectively sent them on a suicide mission, has rerouted the ship to go and get this thing to bring it back to Earth. All other considerations, secondary, crew expendable.
Yes.
Which leads to the rest of the crew being expended, except for the smart lady with the cap.
Yes.
Played by Sigourney Weaver in her first feature film presentation.
Yes.
She'd been on Broadway, had done quite a bit of stage stuff before that.
Oh, but, okay.
I guess that's where Ridley Scott kind of discovered... I shouldn't say discovered. That's probably incorrect terms. But that's how Ridley Scott came to know about her.
Yes.
Was from stage. And she was the last one to be cast.
Okay.
So the other woman on the cast, and I cannot remember the actress's name.
She was the wife in Jaws.
Yeah. Played Lambert, thought that she had gotten the role of Ripley.
Oh, no.
Until she was getting fitted for costumes in London and was told, oh, no, you're this other one. And she didn't want to be that character because of the hysterics. You know, it's a very emotional character.
Yes, it is.
And Ridley Scott convinced her to take it by saying, but you're the audience member. The audience members are going to identify most with you because you're the one that's going to react to all this as being really wild, crazy out there. And the behaviors and decisions of some are going to be stupid. And so you are the audience. And that kind of convinced her to come into it.
Nice.
Let's see, what else? At the end, Ripley wins, you know, gets the alien out of the ship, burns it up in a whole bunch of, you know, spaceship exhaust. She fires up the engines.
Yeah.
And burns it up.
Yeah.
Gives her final notice before going back into cryo sleep with her cat. And credits.
Yep.
That start off slow, then go really fast, then go slow again. Because
yeah. We don't need to know who those people are.
No, clearly not. So what I'm interested in.
Yes.
In the type of movies that we watch, there's so few that are really paced like this.
Yes.
The slower movies we watch, you know, when we watch Dracula, it's a very slowly paced movie, but it's also like 90 minutes long.
This is true, yes.
Or, you know what I mean? It's a shorter film. And so how did that play into your experience of a 2-hour movie that just...
I don't mind slow burn kind of films when there's stuff that happens along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, pre this podcast, not the other one. Hi, Darren. You had recommended I watch The Maltese Falcon.
Right.
I couldn't finish it. It was so slow, and there was it just kept plodding along with no incentive, as it were. This, at least, it would be slow, and then, oh, okay, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then slow, and oh, something happens. You know, okay. You know, I'm engaged, and I want to see what happens next. So, timing and the 2 hours of it was not a problem.
What I like about this is that there's a role for everyone in it. And so, anytime something's going on, nobody's just sitting around waiting for things to happen. They're always doing something. So, there's a scene early... in the second half hour where there's a team that's going off to investigate the crash site that's got them off of their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ripley's just sitting there, and except she's not sitting there. She's working with the computer to figure out what is this SOS.
Yeah. And I mean, they do a very good job of, as opposed to just showing her sitting there and go, oh, I figured it out. It's like, she clearly says, hey, let me see it. Let me see this distress call. Let me try and figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mind if I work with Mother to...
Yeah.
To, the ship's AI is called Mother.
Yeah.
So the next piece is, this is a first movie for Sigourney Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ridley Scott's second film. Mm-hmm. His first was The Duelists. And his director of photography, this was his first time doing a feature.
Wow.
As opposed to doing advertisements, because that's where Ridley Scott started, was in commercials and advertisements. And so, and then Ian Holm, this was one of his first on-screen things, because he did a lot of stuff on stage.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Yaphet Kotto, we've seen in other films and so forth, and Harry Dean Stanton. He was the security, for those of you who are wondering who that is, he was the security guard in the first Avengers movie when Bruce Banner like falls through. He's like, son, you got a condition. Much younger by like 40 years.
Yeah. But,
so many of them in their early career. Could you tell?
Yes and no.
Uh-huh.
And I say that because, like with Sigourney Weaver, you could tell acting to a camera was maybe not her prime and, you know, what she was comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But she knew how to act because she had stage experience. So it's one of those, okay, this is your first time doing this particular kind of medium, but not your first time inhabiting a character.
And clearly not. Especially in her facial expressions, she's a very stoic character,
mm-hmm,
for most of it. But when she's suddenly the new captain and is there's the grimaces, there's the facial tics,
yes,
and eyes that show she's grieving the loss of the captain,
mm-hmm,
even as she realizes she's got a job to do.
Yes.
So that just floors me when I see stuff like that. It's like, man, it's so early in a film career and I'm just pulled right into the way she acts that out.
Yes.
Of course, criticisms. There's a few to be leveled.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of these effects are not going to hold up.
No.
That being said, most of them do.
Yeah, there are a few times where the alien would pop up and you're like, that's PVC pipe.
Well, and there are certain points for me to notice anymore, there are moments where the special effects are just off, like when the newly erupted alien creature out of John Hurt like scurries away.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, just straight off the table. And it looks almost like somebody had attached it to an RC car.
Probably what they did.
And just sent it off the table. It looks really bad, but it's less than a second of screen time.
Yeah.
The same is true for when they knock off Ian Holm's head.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he does that spinny gibberish thing.
Uh-huh.
It's really awkward.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if that's how you intended it to go, but it doesn't quite fit. And then when they basically shut him down,
mm-hmm,
another little fun fact, the latex head, as it dried out, got smaller and it forced the face into a smile. And so, which is why Ian Holm's character Ash at the end of the interview smiles.
Nice.
So that as they go around, you see that latex head has got this really weird dried out smile on it again.
Okay.
But the creature effects are over and above amazing.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yamadi, I think, is the guy's last name that was inside the actor's suit, nails that kind of ungainly and yet graceful kind, mm-hmm, of movements. It will be mimicked in the next Alien movie, because humans are the primary hosts in that one in Aliens 3, which I don't recommend for a lot of different reasons and do recommend for completely separate reasons. If you're into the movies, then you should watch it just to see how things get so fouled up.
Mm-hmm.
But it introduces the idea that the host influences the creature. And so it's a calf in the third one, or a dog, depending on which version of it you watch.
Yeah.
And so the alien moves differently and it behaves differently. It's very, very cool. And so being that it's humans in the first two movies, the aliens are very similar. And the way they move is all modeled on the way this guy did it, which he was not an actor and ended up taking, I think, dance and mime classes in order to be able to properly move in this suit. So this ranks in my top 10 movies.
I can see that. I can absolutely see that.
And so I wanted to sit here with you and watch it just because I'm just like, because if he doesn't like it, I want to have at least watched a good movie before he tells me that he doesn't like it. Yeah, you tell me that you don't like, we'll pick one up there. You tell me that you don't like 2012, the John Cusack, helmed hit. I'm going to shrug my shoulders and go, it's not for everybody. You tell me that you don't like this, and it's like, this was a 2 hours of my life I'm never getting back, and I'm sorry I spent it here. I'm going to feel a little bad.
But you got to see a good movie. But I got to see a good movie.
Yeah. So it's like 2 hours of my life well spent.
That is not the case. I did enjoy it.
I dig that.
When I go into a horror movie, I don't like excessive gore.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about that.
Yeah, we talked about that. And
Super was one of them that you pointed out as being overly gory.
Yeah, well,
without reason.
Without reason, yes. Comedic gore, like, say, Shaun of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's a zombie flick. I'm not huge into zombies.
Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Yes, that's really gory. No, I mean...
Location.
Realistic gore.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
I don't jive with that. It's just I am from the school of it is scarier what you don't see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why this movie jived with me, because you didn't see the alien a lot. And when you did, it was quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's like why Jaws is a good movie, because you don't see the shark.
That was the way this was sold to producers.
Jaws in space.
Yeah.
Nice.
That exact phrase.
Nice.
Jaws in space.
But no, I enjoyed it. It jump scared me a few times.
Mm-hmm.
A little mad about that, but whatever.
You know, 3 dozen times I've seen it, and the hand at the end in the, because by that point I see the head right away. I know it's there.
Yeah.
And that hand comes out, and I always have the timing just a half second wrong in my head. It's like, and hand. Huh? Dang it, Ridley. I'm convinced that my DVD actually has like 7 different cuts of the movie, and it just randomly plays one of those cuts, and that's the only thing that changes.
Yeah. So... couple things.
Right.
One, and 1979 sensibilities being what they were, there's a ubiquitous scene with Sigourney Weaver in her underwear.
Yes.
A little bit of butt crack poking at the top. That was unnecessary.
It was unnecessary.
Even at the time, it was unnecessary.
It was. The supposed reason... supposed giant quotation marks around that was to strip down Ripley out of her quote unquote armor. That was, her work clothes and so forth. And so it was just her and the alien.
Well, okay.
But then she right away puts on a suit.
I mean, okay. She takes off the jumpsuit and she's wearing, lighter pants, not in color.
She's wearing underwear.
Underwear. Okay. But I mean,
Underwear and two shirts.
Yeah, underwear and two shirts. It's like, okay, I can kind of see it. But they spent a long time with her in her underwear, leaning over things.
Yeah.
I just, eh.
They could have gone with the removing the jumpsuit and leaving the rest on because she's getting ready to get into cryo sleep. I mean, that's the reason that she's doing that.
Yeah, I understand. You got to get comfortable for bed, yes.
But the thing was is that there was nothing ever indicated that said that she had to strip down further.
No.
You know, this idea is like, okay, I'm gonna take off the sweaty work pants.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go set these couple things because the shirt was certainly long enough to cover.
Yes.
You know, where it needed to cover. I'm not sure that it's an empowering moment.
It's
for anyone. There are too many males in the mix.
Yes.
For me to see it as a way to empower, you know,
yes.
Ripley as a character. It would have been interesting had Ripley been cast as a male. So the script, the idea behind the script is that everyone was gender neutral.
Okay.
You could cast male, female to any role, and it didn't need to change how they reacted because there were no romantic subplots. Not that we would need to change for that either, but
no.
There were no romantic subplots. There was nothing that was specific to female or male in any of the roles.
This is true, yes.
That said, you know, oh, you definitely need Yaphet Kotto in this role of engineer. You know, you need a strong, masculine, you know,
yeah,
character here. You just didn't.
No.
You know, and that was part of what made... It's part of what makes the movie so talked about now, even in the same way that the first Night of the Living Dead, you know, where you had the black protagonist in a movie that wasn't meant to have one. And so when he auditioned and got it and they didn't change anything in the script or whatnot, it made the movie better.
Yes.
And so this is a see it for me. I realize it's not going to be for every... It's a two-hour slow burn movie.
Yes.
It is a tone poem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is meant to be watched and the tension to build in you as you watch it. Have some ambient light on in the room. That ending is going to hurt.
Yes.
If you don't.
Yes.
You know, just be aware.
I say see it too, with the caveat of you gotta like science fiction, and you've gotta like to be scared occasionally, because this it's not for everybody.
No,
and it's certainly not. It is something I would watch again, but not often.
Well, and so this one is the one that is the most in line with the classic horror movies.
Yes.
The next one is very much an action movie.
I've heard that, yes.
And James Cameron does a good job with those kind of things. So. But what was the other? Oh, one of the other things. So this is last bit of trivia. I've seen this too many times to not just share trivia. The original budget idea for this was $4.2 million,
okay,
which in 1979 was still pretty modest. Ridley Scott went out of his way to find people and go after people who wanted to make an A-tier movie and not a B-monster schlock flick.
Okay.
And so when he got H.R. Geiger, when he got, you know, the cast the way they did, when they started putting the models together, the studio doubled his budget based on the, like, the stills and the... And the storyboarding that were being done. And it shows. The movie ended up with something like an $11 million budget, and which is still fairly modest for 1979.
Yeah.
But it looks like they spent a lot more.
Yes, absolutely.
So see it from me, a see it from Justin.
Yeah.
A be aware of some caveats around it.
Yes.
And it's your turn. You got some ideas?
I do, and I want to apologize to our listeners for going over Chad's projected 16 and a half minutes.
Oh, what did it come out to?
We're at 29.
You know what? I apologize for nothing.
Fair enough.
See you in a week or two.